info on you. So I'm kind of getting more into like quarterback play and other things like that.
Awesome. Well, I'm ready to rock when you guys are.
All right, I'll lead it off. So like we were saying before, we're a New England-based company. So coming to URI for football, what was your first impression of the football environment in New England?
Well, all right, so obviously I came from the West Coast, right? I was played high school at Bellevue High School, and if you guys know who Bellevue is when you see the game, when the movie, when the game stands tall,
yeah,
that's the same school. We beat them. Snapped their 151-0, you know, record, which was the best record, you know, in sports history. So anyway, commonly in the top five, top 10 in the country. It's been a little bit not as good the past 5 years, but you know, typically we're in, nation. We're in the, the running for being in the top 10 in the nation. So. Coming out of that, didn't go into University of Rhode Island, didn't have a lot of opportunity in terms of scholarships and whatnot. I didn't have a junior year, and then all of a sudden I'm playing in a wing T offense where we throw the ball, you know, 6-7 times a game. It's flats, drags, and that occasional backside post that you throw when the backside safety falls asleep. So anyway, and we were smoking every team, so I only played about two and a half quarters a game. So ultimately I didn't have a bunch of scholarship offers. So I got an opportunity to go out to University of Rhode Island, was able to start right away. So any place where you start right away, you typically like, I really enjoyed Rhode Island. It was awesome being a, being a Ram. Our junior year, we really had a great team, so yeah, man, I love the Northeast. I wish I had taken more time to like go over to Newport and see some of the,
oh, yeah,
the history. There's a ton of history there. I've done it post college. I've done more going back to games and then taking some time and checking things out. But when I was there, man, I was all about football.
Yeah, don't blame me. So kind of talk about your high school experience. You said, you know, you didn't have a lot of necessarily the opportunities because of the type of offense you played in. So do you think that's something that hurts a lot of quarterbacks, is, you know, if they're a kid who could be getting some offers, but they play in like a wing T offense or like a triple option offense, you think that hurts kind of their recruiting and just kind of getting their name out there?
Well, yeah, no doubt. I mean, one, stats, right? Stats aren't going to be as strong. You can't show how prolific your arm is and on a consistent level of hitting all the different types of throws, because there's limited offenses that are able to showcase that, right? So, right. Yeah, that hurts. But there are other locations where you can actually get your name out there, and that's going from camp to camp to camp to camp and really starting that promotion for yourself and having a quarterback coach that can help you dial that in and basically know what camps to go to that will be good for the kid. Obviously, the ones are very those are strong where you need to go there for sure, especially the camps that have multi colleges at them. High school offenses definitely can hurt you, and they can also help you, right? And there's ways to go about it. You know, I was one of those guys who actually changed high schools. I was at Eastside Catholic High School, and back then, I left Eastside because it wasn't a powerhouse. It wasn't very good at football, and I needed to give myself the best opportunity to get looked at, so I went over to Bellevue. What's funny is now Eastside Catholic is now top five, top 10 in the country. You know, so it's the record's foot for them. What's funny is they just played Marietta in some postseason game, and they got beat pretty handily. But what's funny is that, I mean, they were sitting there playing Marietta High School here with Harrison Bailey, who's going to Tennessee, and they got all these different, you know, five-star wide receivers there. Even though they got beat pretty good, they you know, they're on the scene. So it's kind of interesting how things have changed, but. Yeah, it can hurt you. It can help you. You got to be smart, obviously. There's a lot of fluid movement going with quarterbacks from organization to organization, or high school to high school.
Right.
So that all happens. It's part of the game to a bit. And I know a lot of colleges, just for you young guys out there, a lot of colleges actually don't want to see a kid move two times, three times, because it shows lack of that you can't compete, that you'll run. So, you know, Saban says, I won't get a guy that had to go with championship.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. So then kind of going, kind of jumping ahead a little. So past your college career at URI, you play in the AFL for a good amount of years, right? So talk about that experience a little, what it was like as a quarterback. Maybe, you know, what are some different things in the 8-man game compared to 11, stuff like that?
Yeah, man. So what happens with, you know, I had a couple of opportunities other than arena, but arena being the main crux of what I did post college, I was able to, you know, play a good amount of years in that league. And I'm going to tell you right now, it's probably the most fun type of football that I've ever played. Because you throw every down, you're always in scoring position, even if you're on the minus one. It's an exciting, fast game. And to kind of put that in context, it kind of works like this. You take a guy who runs a 4.44, and you don't just take the field and half it. You take the field and then you take the width of it and half it. So it's a quarter of the size. And then not only that, you're not done yet. You take the guy who runs a 4.4 and you've made a quarter size field, you're going to give him a head start. Yeah. And so now that guy now runs basically like a 3.7, a 3.8. And so what I used to tell myself is, it was my mantra, I drop fast, I read fast, I throw fast. Mm. And so, you know, your feet, time your eyes to your feet, like Trent Dilfer says quite a bit with the lead 11, he says it all the time, tie your eyes to your feet. When you see a quarterback do that, you start to realize real quick, this quarterback knows what football is, you know, the intelligent side of football is, so he can anticipate the windows. And when you see that, you know that the progression of the quarterback is getting to a maturity level that's pretty impressive.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you got to do that in arena. I mean, that's the bottom line. You look at what Kurt Warner did. You got to do that in arena football. If you don't, you're going to be late, and the ball's, you won't have a shot to hit the guy. That's why a lot of NFL guys that have touched in the NFL and try to play in arena can't really make the transition.
Right. But then, do you know who Marty Gilliard is by any chance?
I'm sorry?
Do you know who Marty Gilliard is by any chance?
Not off the top.
He's actually one of our coaches at Nichols. He played in the NFL for a little, and then he now plays arena. And he's actually someone who has made the transition successfully, but he's like that type of guy. You said he's a 4-4 guy, and now you put him in motion, and he adjusted to it very well, and now he's the best receiver in the NAL because he's made that adjustment with that speed, and that's just how scary that is, like you said, when you have someone like that coming in motion.
Oh, yeah, I mean, it's insane. So, yeah, it's pretty impressive to watch a guy be so fast, and you know, defensive players, they talk about quarterbacks having thick skin when they make mistakes, and really now it's the defensive backs that have to be thick skin because they're going to get scored on. You're going to get seven touchdowns thrown on you in a game as DB, a defensive group. And, you know, it could be like one guy gets burnt four times for touchdowns. It's pretty tough. But, it's a fun, fast game, man.
Right. So now kind of talking more about into quarterback play. So how important do you stress film work? And kind of talk about that, just the value of film work.
So, Mike, I mean, that obviously is a super, super important part of the game, right? Your preparation, you know, I tell guys all the time, your preparation is much your resume going into a game. And when, you know, bosses look at you and they say, hey, what's your resume? You know, let me see the resume. Hardly ever are you going to outdo your resume. You usually are going to do exactly what your resume suggests. You're not going to just be amazing by lightning strike or bad by lightning strike. You're usually going to have whatever your resume is that week of your attention to that opponent. You're going to play exactly what your pregame or your whole week preparation was. You're going to play exactly like that. That's bottom line. The better the preparation, the better the process, the better the results. Bottom line. So a part of that process should be a great amount of time looking at film. You know, you look at guys like Tom Brady, Drew Brees, Peyton Manning, and they're looking at film consistently. And it's how effective. What are you looking at? Like when you talk about the QBIQ system, film watch, knowing how to watch film is a great part of QBIQ.
Right.
So we watch film with an intelligent eye of where basically you're going to, you, when you see a defense and how it reacts or whatever it does, sorry, I'm getting hit, phone calls after phone calls. When you get defenses that you're familiar with or you're accustomed to, you are simply going to be able to react quicker,
right,
with anticipation, and not just use general rules. I know what this guy, how he baits, because I've watched him. He baits this way. His foot is up like this. His body height, his, you know, waist bend, whatever it is, or his wider feet or his skinnier feet, all ultimately mean something. His position, his depth, where he is on the field, you know, all means something. If you can learn that from position to position to position, you know, you can ID the defense faster. You can know what works into that defense, apply it to your current play package, and then obviously use your situational understanding, what you should be throwing, what you shouldn't, and then, you know, throw smart passes, right? Throw smart and great anticipated passes.
Yeah, for sure. So much, so important to getting those mental reps in, especially during the week, watching the film. Yeah. Then one thing that I really liked is that I noticed helped me was watching film and then at practice, actually seeing the scout defense doing what I saw in film. Like, okay, this is what they're doing here. That strong side safety is rolling down in the cover three. Like things like that, just being able to apply those mental reps throughout the practice week. And then when it gets to the game, that's when, you know, you're prepared and you feel ready.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Tyler.
All right, so stalking your social media accounts, I noticed a lot of film work on professional and high-level college athletes. So do you think a young quarterback should study different types of QBs who may not match their playing style? Like, say there's a pocket passer studying a guy who scrambles a lot.
Well, you know, I think studying a certain type of quarterback and how he operates the position is actually it makes sense, but only in the mental sense. Certainly we need to, you know, learn how to manipulate pockets, use our spatial awareness, and be able to put ourselves in the best scenario, you know, making, even though we're in a small space, making extra space, right? But keeping our eyes downfield. So those drills of off-platform, off-schedule type plays need to be rehearsed. So, yeah, you need to work on that stuff. Elite 11 does a great job with that in terms of, you know, conflict climb, secondary reaction, all these different types of drills that make you understand how to maneuver, when to evacuate, when to side door eject, when to climb, when to protect the ball on climb, and then if you ultimately have to exit. If you got a vertical read and you have to move left, you can backpedal. If you got if you have to side door eject left, but yet the throw is out to the flat, you got a 180 flip and run, right? So there's all these different things you have to rehearse. So then when introduced, the situation arises, your body never feels like I'm in new territory. I've rehearsed this a million times. It's like second nature, and I'm just reacting. And I don't care if you're an unathletic guy compared to an athletic guy, you still have to rehearse the same movements. You still have to rehearse the same type of off-platform throws. So evaluating all different types of quarterbacks is definitely important, without a doubt. But most important is the process of the information in front of you. Not only rehearsing the maneuvers in the pocket, but understanding the defense earlier, which means the ball is going to get out of your hands faster anyway.
Right.
You're looking at the defense, you know what they're in, and you know what's going to work well into it, and you're getting the ball out of your hands faster. Then who's better? The line's better. The catch is going to be easier because the DB hasn't had a chance to come on it. I ask my guys all the time, if you throw late, how perfect does the ball have to be? Right?
Yeah.
Ask me a lot perfect. Let's say you throw an out late, mm-hmm. but you better throw that thing perfect.
Right.
Like absolutely perfect, almost out of bounds. Right? So, because the DB's T-stepped, he's already on angle, coming down, collapsing that cushion quick. But if you throw early, like, you know, Aaron Rodgers talks about this. He goes, the more you get better at this position, the quicker you start to realize you don't have to be perfect, but you have to be quick and decisive. And if you're quick and decisive, you don't have to be perfect, right? So the ball's getting out of your hands. Everybody's better for it. Like, you might put the ball here on an out route, but yet you threw it so early, it's not really a big deal. And because the DB hasn't had a chance to react, he can catch it. And he also has a lot more opportunity at, yards after catch. So, yeah, definitely. You want to rehearse, you want to be able to rehearse the physical off-platform stuff, off-timing, off-schedule, but you need to be able to see the defense and know your – because you'll have to do that a lot less if you read smarter.
Right. All right, so talking about off-season film, like in the time period we're in now, should quarterbacks study defenses that they may not expect to face during a season?
Well, the way I do it is we have a general approach on all types of defenses here at QBIQ. We have an online class that goes every Wednesday and every Sunday night at 9. And we talk about every defense there is. We go over everything. Now, I also give them homework where they have to actually go and do a GPS, we call it, game prep steps, towards their opponent, like week one opponent, it might be. You got to go research their film. You have to confirm it's the same D coordinator this year, right?
Yeah.
And if it's not, you got to go research his film wherever he was at. And then, but what we do is we take that game and we try to take two games and we sit there and we collect the raw data, right? For all first downs, and go through it. What did they do? We chart the game basically. And it's step two is then we catalog everything, all the first and tens, all the second longs, all the second mediums, and so forth. And we do it by and then we go to step three and we then give percentages. Well, in first and 10, they're 82% of the time, cover four, whatnot. And you start get an expectation. There's also a step four, and that's called RDR versus D, but that applies to when a coach says, these are our five plays we really like against this defense. And then we have a special process at learning that defense. So bottom line is, I have these guys not only learning general defenses, of course, we keep expanding our knowledge, but at the same time getting pinpoint detailed on our opponents and what they like to do every situation with great expectation. And here's the bottom line. And Mike, you know this as well as I do. Each week on Monday, you get handed a scouting report of that defense you're facing this week. How much better would we be if we did the work ourselves and not just be handed a piece of paper or a packet, right? Yeah. And if you did the work, you're going to know it like the back of your hand. Mm-hmm. I can tell you the GAs will be sitting there in the box or on the field, and it'll be this situation, and they're going, I already know what they're going to be in because they did all the work,
right?
So I make my quarterbacks do it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's just another way to get the more mental reps in, right? Especially at this point in the year when week one may not be till September and you're already getting mental reps in July. That's definitely a great way to already, like you said, get ahead of the game so that you're not getting handed to it and that you're doing it yourself. So, yeah.
We're smashing and getting advanced on everything at QBIQ, man. We are well ahead of the game. Any quarterback out there that wants to advance his stuff, and a lot of guys are finding us right now. I mean, we're busier than all get out.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. What's some things, let's say when you're evaluating a high school guy who's hoping to get recruited to go play college ball, what's some things that you want to see out of that high school quarterback?
Well, he's about to get evaluated, or like if I was the evaluator?
You'd be the evaluator, say from like a college, and you want to see what does he do good? Why would he be good? Why would he be a good college quarterback?
All right. Well, number one, the first thing they're going to do is they're going to look at size. Bottom line, they're going to sit there and put on their, I need 6'2" plus. I need a guy that has a 4.8. Or better run, depending on the offense to run. That they look at some tangible items.
Right.
One thing that they pretty much don't do is help you with size, and they don't height, and they can't help you with speed to a large part. They can But what they can do is build you on weight and width size, right? They can do that, and they can also teach offense and so forth. So, but in terms of quarterback, the number one thing they're going to look at normally is, can he make the throws that I require? You know, they can't, they're not going to go after a guy that has, you know, shorter arms. It just, you would have to limit your offense. So that's going to be your next thing. Then is he tested? Is he battle tested? Is he 2-year tested, 3-year tested at a varsity level? What are his opponents like? I also want to know, you know, what kind of footwork is he? Does he move like a professional, or is that going to be something else I'm going to have to teach? Does he have shotgun lazy feet? Am I going to actually have to teach him? So in college, they don't teach you this stuff. Usually they don't want to sit there and try to make you better at speed, agility, or, you know, footwork rise, or improve your skill. What they want to do is be able to get to their X's and O's and have you operate those to the best of your ability. So basically that's important. And then obviously the big one is, what type of person are you? Are you going to be good for the program? Are you going to graduate? Are you going to have good grades? Are you going to be a good dude in the locker room? Are you the kind of guy that can own the room and be a leader? So those are going to be, basically those are the elements, man. It's a thing of 360. I mean, I will say this. Are you a winner? Are you a winner? Have you been proven to be a winner? Right? That's a big thing. So in, you know, with that being said, I mean, I think that's the full package. If I could check mark all those, I hope people all understand.
Right.
That these scouts are looking for a reason not to recruit you. They got to look at 10,000 films.
Exactly.
They're trying to get off that film as soon as possible. So, oh man. Okay. Done. That was a quick one. Oh, good. Another one done. Now the one that they get glued to, and they get to like play number 4, you're something.
Because sure.
They ain't getting past one or two plays on 99% of players, guaranteed.
Yeah. I mean, I'm as a college coach evaluating if I don't like what I see, especially in those first couple of plays, where usually that's going to be the kid's best plays, I'm not going to want to keep watching. You're exactly what you said.
You got to move on, man. You got to turn around. You got to get to the next guy's film.
Yeah. Exactly. Absolutely.
No doubt.
Mm-hmm. So now kind of, this is more of a question for wide receivers, because we train a lot of receivers and we have some wide receiver coaches on staff. So what are, you know, how does a wide receiver benefit from having a high IQ quarterback?
Okay. Well, one, obviously he's going to be able to be more clear about what he wants to the wide receiver, right? Mm-hmm. One of the things that we get commonly said, especially at high school, maybe lower level college, we're going to get receivers that are not exact with their routes. Having exact routes are important. Then if you could have coverage exact routes,
yes.
Then you're going to have much more precise routes per what's required for either timing of window and understanding of what the quarterback's actually when he's going to get to you, because in college, a lot of colleges are not using the QBIQ system, so they're getting to their guy progression-wise late. Well, what I would call college on time, which is NFL late. But if you get the guy, the wide receiver, you know, to sit there and be able to – I remember one time, actually, it's about 2 seasons ago, University of South Florida was in a 3-by-1, and it was like 3rd and 9. And it was just normal. I forget what the one guy had. It might have been some sort of like vertical scheme to expand the window of the DBs or the coverage. But it was a curl flat on the outside. And it was a curl flat on the outside, and they got basically a cover 3. And it was going to be the curl all day long. Mm-hmm. It was the curl all day long. And the strong safety had gone curl and was going right underneath the curl. And it was obvious for days that that's where he was headed. And the receiver, like a rookie, ran it and curled and didn't move.
Oh,
like, yeah. It was so obvious that that's where that guy was headed. And where you look, if the receiver had known that pre-snap, hey, it's cover 3. I'm the guy. He now knows he's the guy to get the first down. It's cover 3. the guy that I have to worry about is the strong safety who's responsible to covering my curl zone that I'm curling on. So as he's running his stem, he should have peeked inside to see the takeoff of the linebacker, and he was going right to where he's going to be breaking. So his movement at the top of the stem should have been slow dig into the second window. Now, here's what ended up happening. The quarterback caught it, shotgun, three-step gather, gather, gather. By the third gather, should have been sacked, but he had moved up a little bit. The strong safety slipped and fell.
Wow.
And the quarterback threw the ball, and it was caught for the first down. Now, we did a QBIQ film room on it, and we tagged the quarterback on it, of course. And he basically he replied, and he said, "That's exactly what I was saying. Why didn't the guy move to the second window? Because he didn't know what he was looking at. They're not taught it." And that's why, you know, every team that we get involved with at QBIQ, we tell them, don't just buy all the books, the workbooks for your quarterbacks. Get the workbooks for your wide receivers.
Right.
You want to really run the most efficient, smartest, intelligent offense. Don't just be smart at the play calling or at the quarterback position. Make your receivers know exactly what they're facing and who's going to, you know, how to better run the routes because of whatever particular defense you're looking at.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what Coach Shaw really preaches here, because he actually had the receivers. So it was nice having a quarterback mind coaching the receivers, so that now the receivers this year were really on the same page with me with, like, a situation like that. If it was a curl flat concept, they'll know where to go to in that open zone instead of just running their route into that zone defender, right? So it was nice for me to, you know, be able to have smart receivers.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Coach Shaw, I love working with Coach Shaw, man. That guy, he thinks so much the way that we think. So I really appreciate my time with him.
Yeah. Yeah. He definitely says good things about you guys too, for sure.
That's good. That's good.
So how, kind of in general, how important do you stress and think it is for, especially quarterbacks, to be training in the off season? Because I think, I feel like there's a lot of athletes don't really emphasize that off season training as much as they should.
Well, I agree. I mean, but it always going to come down to the guy who does the most reps. Yes. You know, 99% of the time, it's the guy who does the most reps, and then if ever the reps are close, it's the most right reps. You know, and it's the guy who's most focused and passionate. And then if all those are close, then the next thing you got is the other guy that has the overall genetic advantage. So really, you know, when guys aren't working, that's a sad thing. But it goes back to what we said before about your, you know, your process, your preparation ability. And you're only going to be as good as how you prepare.
Right.
So I remember my 95 season. We had, I think, 5 or 6 2-minute wins, most in the NCAA that year. And the reason was, is all summer, we had 3 practices a summer. I went up every practice. I went and got, basically installed from coach what we needed to install, go down. And we'd hand out, each grouping, every position, the most senior or guy that was the best at that position. He was the leader, the coach of that position. They'd go over Indy. We'd then go into group. We did our install. And then, but every practice, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, we would do 30 minutes of 2-minute. We would go with science and verbal, and then we would just go signs. And I'm going to tell you something. We knew every single time we were behind, we were going to win. It wouldn't have been a
doubt. That's awesome.
Wouldn't even a doubt. But the bottom line is, you're going to be exactly the person you practice as when you go into games.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's a great point, for sure.
Yeah.
So, speaking of coaching, the word culture is thrown around a lot in sports. As a coach, describe the culture you'd like to create with a group of quarterbacks.
Well, one obviously is the bonder, right? We want that quarterback to be able to bond everybody and have such a good way of doing that, you know, creating events or scenarios where they have opportunities to build chemistry. You're only going to be as good usually as what kind of chemistry your team has in that locker room. If there's tension in there, usually you're not going to finish well. You're not going to play well. You're going to be inconsistent. But if you always have faith and believe in each other, and that comes from trust, and that comes from friendship, and that comes from bonding. So we want that quarterback to create basically that culture of family, right? And you have a great opportunity to create trust, to create that friendship. And so that's a guy we want. We want a leader. We want a guy that's there early, leaves late. We want a guy that's the hardest worker, because what you do is you trend set. And when you trend set that way, you create frequency. And then when you create the frequency, everybody vibrates up to that frequency usually. Hardly ever does it go different. It's usually you raise the tide, you raise all boats with raising that frequency. So when we do and talk about that, we usually get a very positive result when we sit there and work that way. So, and Mike, you were talking about the, kind of our off-season approach and working out and what are we doing? We have a 22-category daily focus that we go through when we have our off-season approach. I remember a college coach looked at my off-season approach and he said, this is psychotic. And but the bottom line is, I don't want anybody to out-compete or have a better plan than us. There's nobody who's going to have a better plan than us. We have the best off-season plan. No one's going to touch our plan. And so, but a part of that plan is the word of the week. The word of the week is, it's a quarterback-esque characteristic usually, might be leadership. And I have my guys do a three-step process on that. One is you're going to define it in a quarterback way. What does leadership mean in a quarterback way? If you want to bring up somebody, let's say Tom Brady or something, you explain it in his way. And you say, okay, great, what's step two? You create an install plan and execute it. How this week, what are all the opportunities for you to basically be the best leader you can? How are you going to do that? And then they go about logging the information, right? Or how what that looks like. And then on step three is the cycle day, when we change out to a new word, we're going to sit there and look at the results. Now, first of all, what happened? Second of all, what were other people's reactions? How did they come to you or magnetically rise to your leadership? How did you feel the changes were? And so we dial in and detail that stuff. So that helps create, good change in brand or culture. But it's that off-season approach. So yeah, Tyler, I think that, off-season culture build is super important, and that that quarterback has a major part to play in that word you said of culture.
Awesome. All right, we're running a little low on time, so we're going to end with a little bit of a fun one here. Who is your favorite professional quarterback to watch?
Cool. I would say Roger the Dodger, man. When I was growing up, man, it was even though I played for Danny White. Roger, I grew up in Texas when I was young, so it'd have to be Roger. Nice. Roger's callback.
Were you so you went to school in Washington, right? Were you a Seahawks fan at all?
I mean, I'm not really a fan of any
of
team.
A team. Yeah.
I've been around. I was around NFL guys since I was 9 years old and on. I just saw myself as that. I was, it was like, if you breathe oxygen and you don't have to remind yourself to stay alive, to breathe that, football life was that for me. I'm not the guy to sit there and say, I'm going to go out and grind today, and text that out or social media or something like that. To me, it was my life. It's part of the journey, the process that I loved. And it's just like oxygen to me. So I get you. I love football. I respect all athletes. I don't really don't get me wrong. If we're going to sit there and say I get to watch Bo Jackson from the sidelines, Watch him run over people, I would certainly enjoy that.
Oh, yeah, for sure. For sure. Well, that's pretty much all we have, Coach. We really appreciate you coming on. I definitely love what you guys do over there. I'm hoping that, as QB Velocity, we can continue to grow and hopefully maybe sometime down the road too, there's some type of collaboration or something like that we can do in the future. And hopefully we get to the point that you guys are at someday.
Well, that would be cool. Yeah. Let me know if we can help you guys out. We can always expand on great ideas.
Yeah, exactly.
I appreciate you guys having me on. Mike, Tyler, thanks so much, brothers.
Yeah, thanks, Coach. That was awesome.
Thanks, Coach.
Awesome. Cool. Thanks, guys.
Have a good one.